Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer. Today, joined from a wonderful, windy, cloudy, and very pleasant, at least in my opinion, Johannesburg, by Mr. Michael Morris in Cape Town. Michael, how are you?
Fine, thank you. But similarly, sort of breezy and but sunny too in Cape Town today, I'm pleased to say. Nice to see you both.
Wonderful stuff. And Sarah joining us. Sarah, you had a couple of internet issues, but I hope that they are going to remain stable while during the conversation. Welcome very much. And do you share my opinion of the weather in Joburg?
I do. I would add that it's jacaranda season, so I'm paying homage.
Very good. Okay, let us get into the first news story of today. And look, I admit, the reason I'm so pleased about this story is because I'm just sometimes a little bit personally vindictive. I remember very clearly when Kabelo Gomanda, the former mayor of Johannesburg from Al Jamaha, announced that, you know, the people complaining about water being out, which at the time included me, were basically just trying to undermine the work of a black government, I believe is what his phrasing was, which of course incensed me because he was nowhere to be found during that crisis other than to call everyone complaining about the water problems racist. Well, it looks like he's been arrested. So he recently was removed as mayor. This seems to have been partly with the cooperation of the insistence of Action SA, but I suspect the ANC also wanted him gone in Johannesburg. And he was moved, I think, to the position of being an MMC in the Joburg government rather than a mayor. He was arrested over the weekend, allegedly relating to he was arrested over the weekend for allegedly conning residents in a fake funeral policy scam. Now, this is not new. He was, in fact, accused of doing this when he came into office. I remember the DA making a fuss about it when he was first elected mayor. News 24 says in their report here, they previously reported that Gomanda allegedly ran a scam where his business, Itemba Lama Africa, conned unsuspecting Soweto residents in a scheme where they would make monthly payments for funeral insurance. He operated the illegal business in 2012 and then allegedly disappeared when his clients came looking for money. The political party to which he belongs, Al Jamaha, said that it was, you know, not going to comment too much on these issues while the matter was before the courts. However, it praised their counselor for cooperating with the police. He did, in fact, hand himself over. He wasn't sort of dragged out of his house in handcuffs. They said, quote, "Although the political party would like to observe and respect the sub judice nature of the matter, we as a political party reaffirm our respect for the rule of law judicial processes as demonstrated by MMC Gomanda." They did, however, imply that they thought that there was political reasoning behind this arrest, saying, in their statement, quote, "We are, however, surprised by the timing of law enforcement at the time of Councillor Gomanda's appointment to the GNU Clearinghouse Committee and on the eve of the highly contested street renaming from Santon Drive to Leila Khaled Drive," which I think is a load of rubbish. In fact, if anything, this arrest is probably because I would suspect there was a little bit of hesitancy perhaps to arrest him while he was a mayor. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being too cynical. Sarah, let me start with you. One of the worst mayors in Joburg's history. Thankfully, didn't have too long a tenure, but the damage is quite real that he wrought during his term, rather.
I would agree with Aljamar's complaint about the timing, but different timing for different reasons. And that is that when he came in, we knew that he was under cloud and had been under cloud for a while because the alleged criminality did not occur the day he stepped into the mayoralty or the day after. It was known about before. So the only thing I'm concerned about is that they didn't arrest him while he was mayor, and there's no reason why they shouldn't have. Because by all accounts, it was classic sort of the type of sort of Ponzi scheme activity, that sort of salami activity that frauds, you know, a certain level class of fraudsters indulges in, taking money from people who can ill afford to lose money, if you can put it that way. And I think between his clear lack of skills, demeanor, and the allegations of shady business deal, he really should not have been our mayor. But, That's history, as writ by the ANC, Al Jamaa and EFF.
Indeed. Look, you know, I'm not super thrilled with Dada Morero, the ANC mayor's conduct so far as mayor, particularly because he set the bar so low on taking the mayorship of basically people shouldn't expect too much to change in the next 2 years. I mean, probably a realistic assessment, but one would expect maybe a little bit more aspiration from the mayor of the biggest and most important city in the country. But anyway, Michael, you know, this is the only reason we know about this guy at all, I think, is because of the unfortunate realities of how our coalition politics has shaken out and how unseriously, I think, some of the coalition stuff has taken municipal governance in South Africa. Our colleague Marius Rus has made this point that, you know, there seems to be a view that, no, this is all about kind of patronage and sharing power and sharing who, you know, who's in charge, and very little thought given to governance. What do you make of this?
I absolutely agree. And just to underline the point that Sarah made about the fact that the fact of other parties, the ANC and the EFF, supporting this fellow as the mayoral candidate, just looking in at the News 24 story where Belinda Kaiser Ikhozonjoku, she's the DA's caucus leader, comments that since his election as mayor, serious allegations of fraud and deception hung over Gwamanda's head, and allegations which the DA raised as early as May 2023, and yet, despite these warnings, the ANC chose to support him as the mayor of Johannesburg. So it does. I think it's a very good thing to remind voters, remind viewers, remind the public, you know, that there are consequences to the power play decisions made in the course of this kind of power play politics. And this is certainly one of them. But I certainly agree with you, Nicholas. It's always, it brings a certain measure of joy to see deserving candidates getting their comeuppance. And you know, this is perhaps a case in point. He has every right to a fair trial and not to be judged beforehand. But it certainly looks as though this is a case that ought to have come to the public's attention much sooner. Yeah, but very good that it has arisen now. Yeah.
No, exactly. Better late than never. Tara, any final thoughts on this one before we move on?
Just to say, maybe the ANC didn't recognize the criminality. So, you know, they thought they were putting forward a man who reflected their values. That's the ungenerous version.
That is indeed the generous version. I wonder whether the ANC even knew necessarily who they were elevating. I mean, of course, they originally elevated Tapelo Ahmad before, who was, you know, who was also kind of so over his head and incompetent and just not like fit for the job of mayor that he got thrown out basically by the ANC EFF coalition. I believe after he gave an interview referencing some huge loan the city had taken. Before the city had taken it. In fact, before it had been voted on or brought up in council.
Indeed. I think he announced it on national television. It's a story.
which the ANC and the EFF, I think, probably went, oh, what?
Yeah.
Fundamentally unserious. And, you know, there are many things to be unhappy about with the municipalities in Gauteng at the moment. But I will say this, that at least this ridiculous power-sharing agreements where these tiny parties were put in as mayors all over the city, all over the province, rather, seems to pretty much be at an end. I saw last week the ATM mayor in Mogale City, which is the West Rand in Gauteng, has resigned, and he's going to be replaced probably by an ANC mayor. So definitely seems to be a better trajectory we're on. But still, great crises remain, and until they are tackled properly by municipal government, we're going to be in trouble. Okay, let's go on to our next story, and this one is perhaps of a bit more national importance. Stories over the weekend in the media of a dust-up between the ANC and DA in cabinet, the first big fight in a cabinet meeting. So I think this is also a News 24 story, I think I'm correct in saying. Insiders said an extended cabinet meeting on Friday got heated and tempers flared. The biggest disagreement related specifically to a target set in the medium-term development plan that medical aids would effectively be scrapped by 2029. The DA appears to have objected very strongly to this and said that this was something they didn't want to support. And this upset Health Minister Aaron Motsoaledi very much. In fact, apparently he got so upset by it that he was, according to some of the sources that the media interviewed, he got so upset that he had to be called basically to order and calmed down by some of his colleagues in the ANC. The source says that they interviewed the anonymous source. It set off a war of words between the parties to the point that Motsoaledi started shouting and had to be called to order by his colleagues. Motsoaledi tried to class it as a war between rich and poor, and some people said this was not true because you have many public servants on medical aid and you wouldn't call them rich, said the official who asked not to be named. There are apparently lots of major concerns at the moment between the various partners in the GNU over what funding priorities should be focused on by government over the next couple of years. And Motsoaledi has been pushing very aggressively for NHI to be made a funding priority. He and his department head, his sort of head bureaucrat, Dr. Nicholas Crisp, are very committed to NHI as a policy. And it seems that not everyone in the ANC is on board. This is Sunday Times that did this story. My apologies. The Sunday Times understands DA ministers objected strongly to the document endorsing the NHI in its present form and making provisions for how it should be funded. Participants also clashed over control of the country's harbors and the Department of Trade and Industry's localization policy. The localization policy is also something which we, particularly our colleague Chris Hutton, have criticized very sharply. Michael, this is, I think, the rubber hitting the road. The decisions now have to be made. And NHI is, you know, it is the proverbial elephant in the room. It can't be ignored. Someone has to make a call on it. What's your thought on this?
I mean, I think it certainly sort of brings to the fore the real stuff that we need to confront, which is differences of opinion about how to make the society better. I think if you stand back, all sides have this kind of notion that they want to improve things, they want to improve life, and whether it's out of their own sort of political selfishness, they want to stay in power or they want to get into power, they're offering people something which they think is going to sell. And essentially what it is, you know, you get to have a better life. But it's, you know, it's now coming down to the nitty-gritty. Do we have a better life if we have the government in charge of national health or of the healthcare sector? Or are there other options? And so I think it's quite a healthy thing on the one hand. I see that it's quite interesting in the story. It refers to this being the second sort of major dust-up, I suppose, after Bella. I think that was the first one.
That's right.
I was trying to look at the detail here. I think So essentially, what they've done here is pretty similar to what they did in certainly in principle with Bella, is to kind of to take it out of the argument and you know kind of think about it in a different forum or it says refer back to.
It's a very bureaucratic response, isn't it? We'll send it back to another discussion group where they will iron out the differences and then we'll take it to a different meeting.
Yeah. And that's a terrible thing in the one hand, because just, you know, maybe delays the inevitable fight that has to be had. But on the other hand, it might be quite a good thing. And certainly, you know, France, I noticed our former CEO and somebody who's really invested in policy making that really does serve South Africans best. He wrote a letter to Business Day at the weekend yesterday, basically saying, you know, there is a way out of this and there are sort of compromise options that both sides could agree with, but it does involve not having the full-scale, full-blown NHI. What this really means is that there is a real debate about what can actually be done, rather than simply somebody saying, like Aaron Motsoaledi, and I'm sure that's probably why he lost his cool, saying, I'm in charge and this is how it's going to be. And I suspect he sounded a bit like a child who's having a tantrum. he just couldn't get his way. And I think that that absolutely riles him. He's invested so much of his political sense of himself in this really quite socialistic sort of scheme. And, you know, the opposition to it is immense, I think, from within the healthcare sector, but outside, across the political spectrum, and even from within the ANC now, it quite clearly, there are people who are beginning to think, well, hang on, you know, there are lots of people who are not poor who, you know, who are kind of invested, you know. Well, I mean, there are lots of people beyond the sort of rich who are invested in private healthcare because it does offer a better kind of healthcare. You know, it's so the environment is changing and the debate is changing. So I think that's quite a good thing. But that must drive Motsoaledi wild, you know, you can imagine.
One thing that's becoming clear to me is that there are now some differences in the ANC on policy. These were not very clear before sort of Ramaphosa, when Ramaphosa came in and we had the sort of, you know, the false new dawn during his election, when he first became president. There was a story kind of told that Ramaphosa was this great reformer who was going to change the country in a positive direction. And this is an idea that Ramaphosa himself cultivated very strongly. And then it didn't really amount to anything. And it became clear that there wasn't that much of a policy difference within the ANC, or at least, you know, even if there was, the reformists were not willing to properly act on it. Mm. Now, it does seem that that has changed now that we have the GNU. There is now, I think, some clear evidence from a lot of the reporting we've seen that there is a desire to maybe move in different directions on a bunch of key things, NHI being one of them. But it does frustrate me a little bit how the more reformist people in the ANC, with the exception of Fikile and Balula, seem to be very quiet and hold their cards very close to their chest and you know, leak anonymously to the media, but almost never actually kind of go out in public and challenge these things. So we keep getting this weird scenario, and I think you saw it too with Ponyoza Lesufi and Gauteng, where the one side is issuing these furious public statements just filled with ire and anger and rage. You know, a lot of Motsoaledi's kind of press statements and this stuff and public utterances very much seem to, you know, he's accused criticism of the NHI as being just SWAT kafar tactics and all sorts of things like that. And yet, while there clearly is a different view within some parts of the ANC, they're not making themselves super public on it. It's just very annoying because it feels like there's still too much fear within some parts of the ANC to actually begin publicly saying, guys, we need to do things a little bit differently here. I don't know. Sara, what do you make of all this?
Well, it suggests that the reformers are not in the majority. You know? And I don't know for sure, but that would suggest the lack of courage, because the hardliners and those who think that NHI, I assume, is going to make them rich, because it sure as hell isn't going to improve health systems, are the ones who are going to, and you know, stomp their feet. And Motsoaledi's the guy who really, his career has depended on this. I'm not entirely sure. The reasoning for Ramaphosa bringing him back into cabinet in this portfolio. I mean, the fact that he's a doctor does not mean he made then or makes now a good health minister. I don't think this country's ever been blessed with good health ministers, and he's certainly not one of them. But, you know, whatever ideology that he and Nicholas Crisp are motivated by, there's one thing for absolute sure, and it started already with specialist doctors. This legislation will go to the Constitutional Court, and a lot of people will be taking it there. And yet, I can't remember from last week, Ramaphosa sent two pieces of legislation to the Constitutional Court to pass, you know, to comment on and decide whether there were elements that were unconstitutional or not. And then probably very important, but they did strike me as a sort of piece of legislation that it would not be of particular interest to the majority of the population. This, the Bella Bill, those are pieces of legislation that Ramaphosa, as president, any doubts on constitutionality, he should have referred them back to Parliament, and he didn't. So it suggests that, you know, while you have this sort of reformist faction, he is still trying to keep the hardheads, the hardliners rather, at satisfied, or not taking the risk, even at this stage in his career when he can perhaps throw some caution to the wind, not taking the risk that he might create a disunity, which in fact, you know, it was his main goal of incumbency for his first term, and the party fractured and became disunified. So you just think maybe he'd have the courage to kind of go against that and actually say, stuff the party,
no, exactly.
I'm going to lead. What's good for us? No.
That's the same really old great Ramaphosa point. Like, you know, Ramaphosa's desperate desire, it seems, to kind of just smooth over the edges and avoid big fights and just kind of keep the can rolling down the hill, created the exact thing he was trying to avoid, which is a major breakaway from the ANC that brought it down to 40% of the vote. So, yeah, as you said, this is it's kind of madness to try the same thing again. And from the reporting, it seems as though, in fact, this time he actually intervened to calm down Motsoaledi in this particular fight, along with the deputy president, Paul Mashatile, which is in contrast to the internal ANC battle between Fikile Mbalula and Panyaza Lesufi that apparently happened last week, where one of the most striking details of that story was apparently that through this entire fight between the two of them going on in front of him and the ANC sort of tearing itself apart, Ramaphosa apparently just sat on his tablet, quietly not saying anything, and just working on it, which it's kind of a summing up of his entire leadership style and presidency, I think, one that has not served the country particularly well. Anyway, Michael, any final thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, just maybe to add that I think there is a sense among most of the people in the cabinet, I suspect, or so it seems, that for all the differences, they can't actually, none of them can afford to go all out war. They can't afford an ultimate showdown, which is going to, you know, prove one side the winner against the other. It's got to be, you know, I think they have a sense of it. I don't know whether it's absolutely true, but that they've got to actually manage this process slightly more carefully, because the political stakes are actually very high. You know, not succeeding to work together could come at very, very high cost to them all. So, so quite an interesting dynamic at work.
Exactly. Okay, let's move on to our last story. And this is one I'm not quite sure how to sort of talk about because there's a lot of unknowns in this story. So the headline is, 80 health inspectors to search for chemical agent believed to be behind food poisoning in Gauteng. Now, if you've been following the news over the past couple of months, I'd say at least the past year, there have been a lot of stories, particularly in Gauteng, of children either becoming hospitalized or dying from suspected food poisoning. But in all of these cases, it's always been kind of vague what exactly is going on. And if indeed this is out of the ordinary, or, you know, because unfortunately people do get sick and die from things like food poisoning every now and again. And so it's not clear whether these stories are an increase and out of the ordinary sort of incidence of food poisoning or just the sort of run of the mill. But anyway, what's been going on is that in every single one of these stories, there's often some sort of suggestion or allusion to the idea that kids perhaps bought tainted goods at a foreign-owned spaza shop. And this has obviously created a lot of resentment towards foreigners. I think you can sometimes see it on social media and in kind of non-mainstream positions where people are kind of muttering that the foreigners are poisoning our children. There have been a number of these high-profile cases. So in this particular story, national health officials say that they are believed that there could be some kind of chemical agent or mystery chemical agent involved in the poisoning of a bunch of children. Recently, there were 6 children in Soweto who died after they reported buying snacks from a spaza shop, but it's not clear whether that actually has anything to do with this. As the story notes, to date, no evidence has been established to link the deaths to food from the spaza shops. There was also another incident where a number of children were hospitalized due to suspected food poisoning, supposedly after having eaten chocolates that passed their expiry date. And this news story does interview a professor from Stellenbosch University's Center for Food Safety, who said that it was possible that kids were being poisoned by things like snacks from spaza shops, but it was highly improbable that chips from a spaza shop would kill you, even if they were off. So it kind of seems to me as though the National Health Department here either has some information we're not aware of in that it thinks a chemical is involved, or alternatively, that they are trying to come up with a more realistic sounding theory here, because it's not usual that like stale knickknacks are going to kill you, even if they're quite far past their sell-by date. When you read the department's spokesperson here, you kind of get a flavor of what I'm trying to talk about here. This is from Foster Mohale, who is the spokesperson for the health department. Quote, those affected have concluded that these ailments are a result of food poisoning emanating from foodstuff, particularly snacks, sold by foreign-owned spaza shop. This has become a generally held view in the country, which prompted some people to take action based on this belief and understanding. These incidents in Black communities have led to unfortunate and unsubstantiated perception that authorities are turning a blind eye to the crisis and seem not to care about what's happening to citizens. He said, however, that public health officials were working round the clock to unravel this mystery. Now, Michael, I have the strong feeling that this is a witch hunt, that there may be isolated cases here. But until more facts emerge, that's kind of my feeling on this, is that it's got a sort of rumor mill witch hunt feel to it. I don't know. Do you think I'm out of line there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this comment from Foster Mohale is it's really worrying, actually. You know, if you look at it, he's probably fine in saying what he said, because he hasn't really accused anyone, but he plants this idea that those affected have concluded. So we don't really know who that might be and on what basis they've concluded. He doesn't question the basis on which anyone's made this conclusion. That's the poison has come from snacks sold by foreign-owned sponsor shops. So he draws this direct connection, but suggesting that somebody else has come to this conclusion. And then he adds, to kind of back this up, he says, this has become the generally held view in the country. Well, I don't know if that's true, but it now seems to be true, because he is the department spokesman saying so. And this has prompted some people to take action based on this belief and understanding. So he doesn't question the belief. He doesn't suggest that there's a problem with this. He's just stating this as a matter of fact. But the clue to why there's a problem here is actually in the next line, where he says the problem with this unsubstantiated perception. Again, there he appears now to be saying there's something not quite right about this, but it's actually not that at all. The unsubstantiated perception is that the authorities are turning a blind eye to a crisis affecting citizens. You know, so clearly. The whole temper of this thing is that foreign-owned spaza shops are basically to blame, and citizens mustn't blame the government for not caring about their health, because the government is going to step in and do something about it. But there's no questioning of what the actual source of the problem is. You mentioned earlier that, you know, that in the report it refers to the children. What was the exact phrasing? The children reported buying snacks from a spaza shop. Well, the children might have reported drinking water from the municipal water supply. I mean, that might have been a much more likely source of serious illness. Any number of things that those children could have done. But none of these things are tested. And it all presented in such a way that it has a plausible ring to it. People will begin to think, yes, we know those cheap spaza shop snacks, they've got a funny color, and the kids say they didn't taste good last time they were there. And so this, you know, this whole narrative will build up. Everybody will decide they know exactly what the source of the problem is. And there'll be no proper examination of, you know, what the actual problem is. There might be something much, much more serious going on, which is just going to be overlooked. So it's terrible.
Exactly. Exactly. May I venture, without evidence, but I suspect that this is just as plausible a theory, not more, is that the massive sewage treatment problems and the enormous number of leaks in our sewage system, which, mm-hmm. if you go to parts of Soweto or the inner city in Johannesburg, or to be honest, basically any suburb at the moment, you will probably find a leaking sewer main. And you know what's really a good place to get very sick, particularly kind of food poisoning type stuff, is just being in any kind of contact with sewage. Now, you know, is that the cause? We have no idea. What's also frustrating about this is, you know, there doesn't seem to be any kind of clear forensic sort of investigation into this. I mean, you know, is there a chemical involved? Did they find something weird in one of these kids who passed away? It's not clear from the reporting. Mm. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. Mm. But, you know, as you say, Michael, the quote from the department spokesperson here does not shed a lot of light on what actually going on behind the scenes here. Sarah, final thoughts on this one?
Well, this is what I think we can expect from the health department under the NHI. It is, to my mind, it's simple. You don't send 80 health inspectors going out to investigate something in areas they don't know that there's a problem. You send a specific forensic team out to the area in question. You say, we can't comment at this stage. Investigations are ongoing and urgent and underway, et cetera. And a full report will be made by the health department once we have concluded the matter and have some findings. That's what you say if you're a professional. This is tapping into the worst of South Africa's instincts. And I think it's absolutely heinous. And it's another reason why these are not the people you want totally responsible for your healthcare minus your medical aids.
No, that's exactly right. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show most interesting. We will, of course, be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Wrap. Hope you all have a wonderful day, everyone. Cheers.